I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The official expansion of James Ward-Prowse territory, transgressive penalty-taking chat, a huge test for the only as far as clearance threshold, more non-committal football-based audiobook voiceovers, when you ramp up the title race rhetoric a little too early in a game, not every penalty dinked down the middle is a Panenka, on the train, footballers called Pete, the most in-these-parts derby match in the UK, could you have an in-and-out striker? And the Keezy intonation popping up in some unlikely places. Brought to your ears by Goalhanger Podcasts. This is Football Clichés. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. On the adjudication panel with me today is Charlie Eccleshare. Hello.
Hello.
And David Walker. Hello.
Hello.
Now, you both, and indeed everyone listening, will remember us talking about this last week. Not keen on this at all.
Ward-Prowse. Emerson with a chance to cross. Good defending by Romero. Corner to West Ham. Ward-Prowse territory late on here for the Hammers.
Jake Payne writes in, Charlie says, a corner being announced as Ward-Prowse territory by Fletch. Surely that isn't a valid use of territory. It's an abuse of the term territory, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of 50-50.
And would you believe it? Just days afterwards, this happened.
Ward-Prowse with a corner for West Ham. On it's evading everybody! And it's gone all the way in from James Ward-Prowse!
Charlie Eccleshare, perhaps the first instance in Clichés history of someone pinning up one of our podcasts on their dressing room wall.
Incredible turn of events. This was how I found out that it happened as well. A message from you saying, James Ward-Prowse has scored a corner. It was quite a realisation.
Me too, Dave. I also found out via second-hand information from this, and I was thoroughly thrilled to have done so. A great turn-up for the books.
Wonderful timing. I mean, yeah, how silly we were to belittle Fletch's usage of James Ward-Prowse territory. Proved right.
Well, maybe, but Charlie, you know, should our opinion now change? Are corners now James Ward-Prowse territory? Should the bar be lowered, or has he met the bar?
I don't know. I mean, Douglas Luiz has done this more than once, hasn't he? I think that's
a good
point. Need to have done it multiple times before we're even talking about it being territory for a direct goal. Because at the moment, you know, it could have just been a bit of a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, corners are harder to score from, Dave, than free kicks. But, you know, you have to do it more than once to make anything your territory.
Gamps Pedersen, he did it a bit, didn't he?
You love Morten Gamps Pedersen. Absolutely love him. You drop him in one every three episodes.
He's squarely in that sort of Barclays era. He's sort of the poster boy for that Barclays era.
All eyes on their Europa League quarterfinal, first leg against Leverkusen on Thursday.
What a time to do it, it would be.
How across Olympico were you guys? I mean, it was suddenly everywhere. And I don't remember hearing that before for one of those goals. I'm not suggesting it hasn't been used, more that I just missed it. But I didn't realise it was so commonly widely acknowledged.
No, it is okay. A thing, but not in English football, certainly not.
So that's what people call direct goal from a corner. They call it an Olympico.
An Olympic goal.
Everyone was at it after that goal.
Not for me, personally. Just got straight from a corner. I think there's something quite rudimentary about it. It's not as audacious enough. I mean, plenty of players are attempting to do it, but I feel like it's, I don't know, more of a ripple in football's...
Yeah, and often it's not even deliberate.
Yeah, just a great delivered corner, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, spectacular or not, it was undermined somewhat by automated text commentary, Dave, describing it as James Ward-Prowse, right-footed shot from a difficult angle on long range at the left of the bottom right corner, following a corner.
Now, that's an acute angle following on from Dan James' effort.
Entire podcast episode getting ripped apart with one goal. Incredible. Yeah, well done, James Ward-Prowse. Elsewhere at Molineux, this came from MV. This is from BBC's Final Score. I'm not sure I've ever heard this for a penalty before, and even less sure how I feel about it.
Up step Luis Paquetar. He sent the keeper the same way, but it was too well put into the bottom corner.
Sent the keeper the same way.
It doesn't sound like it, but that must be a he's in too deep there and then has to sort of improvise. He surely is thinking as he starts that he sent him the keeper the wrong way, then realises and has to style it out. You wouldn't just deliberately do that, surely.
Dave, I mean, I thought he might. It's quite a superficial thing. Maybe we shouldn't be reading too much into it, but you're taking the agency away from the goalkeeper completely here. Normally it's the goalkeeper guesses the right way, and now it's just it's all the forwards doing, apparently.
I remember we had a while back, we had a clip about where a commentator said in a penalty shootout, I think it was, sends the goalkeeper the right way.
Oh, right. I don't remember that at all.
But this is a slight variation on that. Sends him the same way. Yeah, it does. I think you might be onto something, Charlie. It does have the feeling of sort of, oh, no, I've gone down an avenue here. I'm going to have to just keep going.
I wonder as well, because does he say Luis Paquetar or something? He gets the name wrong. But you know, sometimes when you say, and then that's sort of in your head, and I think he might have momentarily then kind of lost the next bit, and then he's got to kind of reel it back.
He may be.
We've all been there.
If anything, it makes the penalty look even more confident, because it's like, you know.
Yeah, come here.
I'm putting it there.
I'm backing myself.
And he's still not going to save it.
Yeah.
So maybe that was it. Other little anomalies in the Premier League commentary from the weekend. This came from NW, who was watching the world feed for Villa versus Brentford. Villa piling on the pressure in the latter stages. 79th minute, cross comes in, Brentford clear.
Bailey to pull it back. Brentford have so many bodies in that penalty area. Cleared away, only as far as Martinez.
Hang on a minute. Only as far as the opposition goalkeeper. That's the end game for a clearance. That's where you want it to go. Unless you're booting it into the stands, which is just an arguable destination for it. Only as far as Emi Martinez. What sands are shifting here?
Where was he on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sign of modern football, isn't it? That now the way they're playing, like extra outfielders.
In my investigations to get hold of this clip, which took an insane amount of effort and at least three people, I looked it up on whoscored.com to find out exactly where on the pitch Emi Martinez was, so I could track down the clip for a start. He was just inside his own half, sort of level with the centre circle, which I still don't think qualifies. I mean, let's take the individual out of the equation for the moment, Charlie. If your clearance clears the halfway line out True. Of your penalty area, that's way beyond the only yeah. as far as threshold.
Yeah. When you hear only as far as, you kind of, well, I imagine a kind of clearance up the line that is intercepted by the first player that it's trying to beat almost. You know, so it's only going like 10 or 15 yards and it's hitting the guy. The first person who tried to intercept it, intercepts it.
My only as far as scenario would be a header that just doesn't get enough power on it and it goes to the first opposition player outside of the penalty area to sort of get it back in again. So it's almost not, it's better than half cleared, obviously, because half cleared is essentially a mishit clearance. This one just doesn't have enough power on it and it goes to the first available player outside the penalty area. Right, next up, another recurring bit of content for us potentially now. Scott M has some more incorrect football chanting from audiobooks. He says, I had to bail on Ross Raisin's actually conversant a natural a while back because of the narrator. Here is the example.
Some kind of altercation has started up over by the window onto the pitch. Outside, two teenagers in club replica shirts had climbed into the enclosed seating area. One of them was standing on a seat, pointing and chanting at Yates on the other side of the glass. You're shit, and you know you are.
I mean, this tuneless version, Charlie, does work quite well. The kind of the emphasis of it is actually basically perfect. If you were to say it to someone, that's exactly how you would say it.
It's really cutting, isn't it?
And you know you are.
And the worst thing is, you know you are. The worst thing about it?
Almost Keezy-esque, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know you are. They've got to learn. They need to learn. These are basics. These are the basics.
Yeah, although maybe this is a better way to do it in this format. Because if he had sung it, he probably wouldn't have nailed it as we heard last week. You can get the chant.
It wouldn't be as cutting, no.
It sort of does work quite nicely. I think this should be no halfway house. You either do that, you either make it as if it's drop it into a conversation and put some emphasis on it, or you go all in and you sing the song properly.
Well, maybe there is an alternative angle here, Charlie, which is, you know, maybe non-football literate people would be completely taken aback if someone started singing halfway through a sort of passage of a book. Maybe it would be too kind of disconcerting. So maybe they've had to sort of deliberately do it.
As well, do people, like, I know a lot of people listen to podcasts when they go to bed, and I imagine that's similar with audiobooks as well. And it might, you know, if you're like, oh, I'll have a nice sort of soporific, soothing book before bed, and suddenly you're doing that and you've got your shit and you know you, it might sort of make you jump and not really be what you want as you're trying to wind down.
Someone from the industry will be in touch for certain. I mean, given the number of emails I had with trigonometry applied saying, actually, it was a really tight angle, which I still disagree with. You never know what will happen. Now, the transgressions come thick and fast on this podcast episode. This came from Tom Fleming and many, many others. Here's the World Feed commentary for Kevin De Bruyne's 13th minute equaliser for Manchester City at Crystal Palace on Saturday lunchtime.
Excessive league titles, they never know when they're beaten.
Charlie, I'm not having it. They never know when they're beaten. With an equaliser to make it 1-1 in minute 13.
Yeah, a mate of mine was in touch about this as well. I mean,
there's no fighting spirit there.
Yeah, it's so early and, you know, it's City away at Palace. It's not, like, obviously ludicrous. And I was thinking, like, title run-ins, I think, lend themselves more to kind of muscle memory types of commentary. Like, there are so many staples that, you know, even across this weekend just gone, you have that. Then there was a lot of kind of, you know, we talked about over to use and all of that, but there's so much stuff as well about kind of they are not going anywhere. Like, even within Liverpool against Sheffield United, there was quite a lot of, like, this would be a hammer blow in the title race, yada, yada, yada. And then when they scored, it was kind of like, they are going nowhere in this title race. And it was just like, I don't know, it's such like big conclusions being drawn with every goal, I think.
Yeah, for what is essentially quite expected results. Yeah, so having to ground out the narrative. Speaking of which, Charlie, were there any twists and turns this weekend? Did anything that happened qualify for twist or turn?
I think Liverpool United can be in the, but both the outcome,
a turn or a twist.
They were probably both within that. But the fact that the lead changed hands this weekend, which hasn't happened that often because all of them have just been winning.
Yeah.
So that was quite a rare thing to happen. And the fact that at different points on the live league table, all three of the teams would have been top at
okay,
different
cool.
points, wouldn't they?
That's good.
So that to me sort of works for twists and turns.
I think a draw in this instance is a turn. A defeat to Manchester United would have been a twist.
100%. Absolutely right. Twist is definitely, obviously, more emphatic than a turn. Right, Dave O'Leary got in touch. He was listening to the Old Firm Derby on 5 Live, and he says, it seems we have reached the eccentric old uncle stage of VAR discourse, courtesy of Vicky Sparks.
It actually was a foul. It was actually in Rangers' own half. A lot of play after that. I'll tell you what, it's not stopped Rangers. They're still on the front foot.
Well, we always have controversy in these games, and that's it. Was it far enough back in the attacking phase of play as well? VAR.
Dave, if anything, that's the closest we've got to making VAR sort of sentient in its own right. Obviously, I am addressing a human being here, but, you know, the system itself.
What are you like?
Yeah. Even VAR doesn't know what it's going to do next, Charlie.
I think that's the most fondness with which it's ever been spoken about, really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a hammer blow, Charlie, I would say, to the VAR kind of naysayers, because this is really saying, oh, God, what can you do about it?
And can't and live with it, can't live without it.
That's the next stage of VAR acceptance, isn't it, really? Worrying. Now, in that Old Firm derby, Celtic took the lead after just 21 seconds when Dyson Maeda closed down a clearance. And it flew straight past Jack Butland. And BBC Sport Scotland tweeted, the fastest goal in the Scottish Premiership this season, and what a time to get it for Dyson Maeda. Dave, I don't think this meets the what a time to get it threshold. You usually would hear it for his first goal of his career, what a time to get it. Or his first of the season, what a time to get it. There's no time to get a fastest goal in the Scottish Premiership this season. It's completely irrelevant. Wait, what a time to get it.
But it's in an Old Firm derby, though. Mm. So that is...
Oh, it's great that, conditions for being what a time to get something. I'm just saying that having the fastest goal in the Scottish Premiership this season is not the thing that it should be a great time to get. So what?
Yeah, I know what you mean. There has to be a limit.
It's not a personal landmark. It's not a what a time to get goal.
No, I don't know. I think it is. If you're gonna get the fastest goal in a season, where better time to get it than in the biggest game of the season?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference. He scored the 500th goal of the Scottish Premiership season. And what a time to get it.
And what a time.
It's a statistical quirk that doesn't really belong to him. It's nothing to do with him.
Well, I don't know.
feel really strongly about this, actually. And so does Rude Boy, who sent it in. So there you go. Right. Have you seen Matt O'Reilly's penalty to make it? He was doubling Celtic lead in the first half at Ibrox. Widely described, Charlie, as a Panenka. It's just not a Panenka. It isn't.
No.
It's a really dangerous situation we find ourselves where any penalty that's sort of just not quite dinked, but sort of just delicately floated down the middle is going to be described as a Panenka. It's not. A 50% of the Panenka technique is the disguise and the rushing up to the ball and looking like you're going to smash it. It doesn't do that. He quite deliberately just goes, I'm going to put it down the middle and I bet you're going to dive anyway. And that's what happens.
It definitely has got out of control in the last few years. Also with like trajectories and all sorts, it's become complete free-for-all.
It is a weird penalty, Dave, though. I mean, it isn't even quite a dink, is it? Sort of delicately side-foots it. It's one of the strangest penalties I've seen for a while.
We've seen this more commonly in the last few years as people, I think as penalties in general get, people are better at penalties and there are more variations on penalties these days, I think, as people practice more and stuff. Harry Kane is fond sometimes of a slightly disguised, quite slow side foot, kind of not a dink, not a chip, but like a lofted side foot down the middle sometimes if you just completely send the goalkeeper the wrong way. But there is a bit of a, it kind of looks like he's going to go for a Panenka, but he doesn't quite commit to it. Doesn't quite commit to the dink. What about Cole Palmer's one the other week for Chelsea? He sort of dinked one, didn't he?
I can't remember the run-up specifically, but it looked like it was a fairly classic Panenka.
Yeah.
I mean, the execution of it certainly seemed...
There was an arc to the trajectory of the ball.
Well, that's okay, isn't it?
Yeah.
A parabola.
You want a bit of a parabola to your Panenka. Anyway, that parabola is us to the end of part one. We'll be back very shortly.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to Football Clichés, back to the adjudication panel, and we kick things off with James Randall. Now, we're close to Euro 2024 on the plane talk, Charlie. Here's BBC Radio 5 Live's John Hunt on some Team GB Olympic swimming hopefuls.
So, well done to Kiana McInnes this week. She's qualified in the 200 metres butterfly. Honey Osrin, a backstroker of immense talent. She's made the Eurostar as well. Of all the youngsters, Ollie Morgan on the men's side of the team has been brilliant.
Nicely done, I think, Charlie. Didn't make too big a show of it, just on the Eurostar, and that's how it should be.
It sounded like that just was, you know, he was just describing it in the most natural way to him. I mean, I remember for the Euro 2016 Euros at the Telegraph, it was who's on the train rather than who's on the plane.
Right.
So we have sort of been down this road or these tracks before.
In that example, England weren't staying in Paris, were they? Were they? I think Eurostar is Paris, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah, Eurostar in this case is very specific.
You get yourself a connection. You can go anywhere you want.
Yeah, I know, exactly, but it's not quite as nice. I don't think it's quite... I don't think...
You go to Belgium, you're getting the Eurostar still.
I bet England flew to Euro 2016.
They probably did in reality, but it kind of worked.
Whereas Team GB, you'll see them on the platform at St Pancras in August, I'm sure, all of them together.
Yeah, slightly in their track suits. Smaller budget, you'd imagine, for certain sports. But interesting, Dave, though, that you could second guess it and you're trying to be too clever and say on the train when actually you might fly. So don't overthink it is your message.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, quite right. We laid down the gauntlet last week because someone asked why there aren't any footballers called Pete. And to be honest, you didn't find many either. Someone got in touch and said there's a Hartlepool goalkeeper on loan at the moment, Charlie, called Pete Jameson. And he's a proper Pete. His Wikipedia page says Peter, but he is known as Pete, pretty much widespread. Would you have expected it to be a goalkeeper?
Now I see it, I can believe it, yeah.
Interesting that it is a goalkeeper, because since we talked about this last week, I have been told that Peter Schmeichel is referred to as Pete by friends and colleagues.
Pete Schmeichel.
I mean, goalkeepers are outliers, aren't they? So I guess it would make some sense that if it's going to be anyone, it would be them.
Yeah, Big Pete, I guess that kind of works. Elsewhere, the only other example we got was a soccer player over in the US called Pete Marino, who sounds like a right little Pete, once of Kansas City Wizards, Columbus Crew, Tampa Bay Mutiny, Miami Fusion, and Coco Expos, of course. Had a bit of a reputation as a super sub. His nickname came to refer to his clever goal-poaching style of play and was reinforced by a notable handball goal in early MLS history. Marino was first dubbed Sneaky by a crew teammate who found him slippery and hard to mark in practice games. Sneaky Pete Marino. That's such a Pete name.
Sneaky Pete Marino sounds like a little guy who's a kind of gangster who he's really hard to pin down for his various crimes.
This was
Sneaky Pete Marino.
This is perhaps something that didn't come up in our sort of hypothetical Pete deliberations, Dave, is that Pete Marino was 5'8". Pete Marino is such a 5'8" name, isn't it?
It is a smaller person's name, I think, yeah.
Weirdly, little Pete, Sneaky Pete Marino also played for Bayer Leverkusen, according to his Wikipedia page.
Find a little coda to his career, Charlie. In 2007, Marino became a founder of and player with the Treasure Coast Galleons of the newly formed Florida Elite Soccer League. They don't give a shit about their names, do they? They just don't care. They do whatever they like. The Treasure Coast Galleons. Rubbish.
According to Wikipedia as well, he's still playing for them. They haven't officially ended his career. It's 2007 too. Yeah, he's still going.
Fair play to him.
Still sneaking around.
He knows that if he retires, there's no Pete's left except for one random Harleyball goalkeeper.
It seems that he scored 41 goals in 34 league starts for Coco Expos as well. So quite the prolific goal scorer.
The marksman.
Yeah.
Harry Rose is next in touch. He's got a bone to pick with some viral ranking of UK football derbies from last week, and suggesting that Celtic and Rangers were the kind of top tier of the derbies. As he said, inspired by this nonsense engagement bait, can the adjudication panel consider which is the most these parts derby, as in it really matters in these parts? For me, it's either the Bristol derby, Plymouth Exeter, or Portsmouth Southampton. Interesting choices, Charlie. I think that might inform where our deliberations go with these parts.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, you know, Harry's thinking a kind of south, southwest, western kind of
it just
thing.
Implies far flung in a UK context. It's like, you know, the provinces away from us is kind of what the mainstream media says. Well, those parts over there, they love their football over there, you know.
In these parts. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because I don't really think of it necessarily in those parts of the country, that those parts, these parts. I'm trying to think what is
Norwich,
most of
which
these
is
parts.
Hugely these parts, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's
because
a good
they're
shout.
So they're so dominant in that area.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a good because it's quite isolated.
I think it's a little bit too obvious, though, and it's a bit too. That derby's slightly too mainstream, whereas your Bristol derby, it's not going to prick the consciousness of the wider footballing sort of discourse very often, is it?
Yeah.
I actually went to a Bristol derby in the Johnson's Paint Trophy probably about 10 years ago. And let me tell you, it did matter in those parts.
Feels like a Gary Weaver thing to say, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Parts. Yeah, absolutely ripe for Weaver.
He's been to so many parts.
But Plymouth Exeter the same as well. Probably hasn't happened that much, Plymouth Exeter, over the last sort of few years or whatever. But Portsmouth Southampton, maybe a slightly bigger version of it, but...
Yeah, I don't think it quite meets the quaintness of these parts.
Yeah, there is something... Yeah, it's kind of... It needs to be fairly isolated. It needs to be, yeah, not so heralded, not a kind of obvious one, because you wouldn't need to say,
so,
obviously...
So
like,
Tyne Weir, you would rule out, despite it being fairly...
Yeah, I think so, because it's so
in
obvious.
Its own place. Okay.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, it's really matters in these, but it's like, well, yeah, obviously everyone knows that. It's a footballing hotbed. I think it helps if it's not played all that often as well.
So it can't be a hotbed,
but it also
can't be a crowded metropolitan area either.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think...
What's the least these partsy derby, Dave?
Any of the massive ones, really, sort of Old Firm, North London, Merseyside Derby doesn't really work for these parts.
What about the Dundee Derby? Because they're too close together to be a big enough area to be these parts.
This part.
This road.
And this very specific part of the country.
It would be remiss of me not to mention Watford Luton in this discussion. I've heard that mentioned a few times because it is...
Different counties?
Yeah, it's not quite
a bit of a stretch
geographical derby. Yeah. So yeah, these parts would be they're quite far apart actually, but it does get described in those terms sometimes. I heard a little bit of when West Brom played Wolves in the Cup earlier this season. There was a bit of that sort of talk around it as well.
Yeah, I looked at that on that list, and I thought that, but then yeah, I think it's too obvious and too hotbed.
I think it gets obscured by some of the other Midlands derbies,
maybe
a little bit. And if you're an outsider to the Midlands, you're never quite sure. Beyond Birmingham and Villa, you're never quite sure who hates who exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Right. Rob Graham gets in touch. Rob Graham, of course, famous for creating the Football Clichés podcast spreadsheet, which has gone on to be maintained by me to make sure that we all know how many caps everybody's got. So thanks to Rob Graham, a Hall of Famer in our administrative terms. Anyway, he says, the chap behind me at the Bristol Street Motors Trophy Final, can't call it that. I don't know why. Anyway, said that Peterborough are lacking an in-and-out striker. Now, obviously, he meant out-and-out striker, but it made me wonder who the best example of an in-and-out striker is. Charlie, what angle are you going to go for here? Are you going to go for the direct opposite of an out-and-out striker, or are you going to go a bit more kind of crafty with this?
Well, it's where in and in sort of factors here. If an out-and-out striker, we're saying, is absolutely...
So what is an out-and-out striker? Let's pin that down. Okay. What do we mean by this?
A kind of archetypal number nine. What they're all about doing the kind of classic striker things, be that scoring goals, holding the ball up, making
last
runs in behind.
Last shoulder defender.
Yeah, just all those. The most important things on the job spec of a striker, that is what they do, and that's all they do.
And they can only play through the middle. It can't be a player that could sort of maybe play out wide or play number 10 or whatever. It's a striker. It's a number nine. He's been bought to score goals.
By that measure, Dave, if we were going to go for in and out striker, is that someone who sort of neglects their duties every now and then to do something else? Or is it someone that sort of fades in and out of games? What is it? Or they're just inconsistent? Or what would you consider an in and out striker to be?
Are they in and out of form? Are they in and out of the team?
Patchy, streaky. Or are they dropping deep, Charlie? Sort of slightly false ninety.
Yeah, they're going in to come out.
Yeah, I think it's more about what their sort of role rather than how good they are. Because an out-and-out striker as well isn't about how many goals they score necessarily. It's about the fact that they only do strikery things. And strikery things include, you know, holding the ball up as much as it is about scoring goals. So I think it's a role thing. And then it's just about whether you're saying, you know, if in and in is a kind of, you're a striker by name, but you do, like Kai Havertz.
Okay.
Would he be...
Is he an in-and-in or an in-and-out?
Yeah, exactly. But he was, I guess he would be characterised... He's that kind of false ninety type, although maybe playing more like a striker now. But whether he's in and in, if you're saying the opposite is in and in, then I guess an in and out is, yeah, they can do a bit of that stuff, but they're also no stranger to playing as a wide forward or as a number 10 or whatever.
I do like out and out striker as a phrase, Dave. I think it evokes something in your head straight away about what it involves, but I wouldn't accept it for any other position. Maybe out and out winger. An out and out winger kind of implies that, you know, that's their extreme duty. That's all they do. That they're very, and I guess these days, Dave, out and out winger may be more worthy of emphasising because you get so many different types of.
They're an old school chalk on their boots type, as opposed to one of these
almost more literal for a winger because it's out there.
Well, a lot of wingers these days are out and in.
Yeah.
Would it help? These are the top Premier League scorers. Haaland, Watkins, Salah, Palmer, Solanke, Bowen, Isak, Son.
Well, Haaland is your out-and-out striker.
He's your out-and-out. I would say Dominic Solanke's your out-and-out, and he's one, and that's not about the fact that he's scoring a lot of goals at the moment. It's just that he is, you know, he's a target man, he can hold the ball up, he just does all strikery things. Ollie Watkins, I think you say, is an out-and-out striker. Like, I know he drifts into wide positions, but he only really
tricky,
ever plays through the middle. Like Salah clearly is not an out-and-out striker. Could he be an in-and-out in that he's a wide forward? But
yeah, he's very in-and-out. Yeah, because it's not a bad thing. It's just that he does other stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And he can't, even though he does, like, he really is just about scoring goals and setting them up. He just happens to start from a different position.
That was Liverpool's problem at the weekend. He's got too many in-and-out strikers. That's it. Just need one out-and-out one. That'll do. Mind you, that's got to be careful there, Charlie, because that's deemed to be the answer to everything. Just need a number nine.
Just need a number nine and score, what, 20, 30 goals a season? And do everything else really well.
We should do the answer to everything 11, which should be low 11 number nines. That's it. That's
the final piece in the jigsaw, 11. Yeah.
Definitely. Right, speaking of the last piece of the jigsaw, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Ford
It wasn't a vintage weekend of keys, despite the beIN Sports social media team's best efforts. I mean, whilst I am slightly tiring of his weariness towards Erik ten Hag, this particular instance of it felt too good to ignore.
Ten Hag believes that from the first whistle to the last, Manchester United were the better team in Liverpool. The recent cup tie against Liverpool.
I looked this
Is there anybody, anywhere that thinks that was the case?
Liverpool had 58% possession, 11 shots, 8 on target. Lost the game themselves. They lost the game. Man United didn't win the game. But Erik ten Hag, that there for me is a man who's trying to convince the owners and the fans that he still should be the manager.
Stupid,
no,
Jason.
I know, and we're sitting here now.
I'm now reading the very same things, I think, as you are and others on the social. Manchester United fans know
exactly
what's happening.
They're good judges. Football fans are good judges.
If he comes in the dressing room today and delivers that message to the 11 that start, what are they going to do? Look at it. They must look at him bemused and think, are you serious?
Honestly, I mean, I've just been looking at some of the stats, Jason touched on one or two there. Even like things that, if you dominate the game, that pretty much means you must have had more of the ball and you probably enjoyed the ball. They had 385 passes, United. Manchester, Liverpool had 620.
There you go.
And they were dominated. Now, how can you dominate somebody where you have half the time on the ball, basically, and half the passes? Listen, it's the same every week. It comes like, I mean, he's actually said that he played brilliantly at Chelsea. Mm. To come back in it. No, they didn't.
He's dressed the same way as he was for the cup tie. He may be in his mind thinking.
That'll be in his mind, yeah.
Very astute. Do we need Ten Hag to go, Charlie, just for this reason?
The funny thing is, I have found myself saying very similar things to Keezy about United. I kind of agree with him about Ten Hag. I have to say, I don't know if that's me just having an extreme view on this, or, you know, stop clock and all that from Keezy.
No, but, it's not a massively hot take, is it? I have to say.
No, exactly. No. Like, I don't think they're like, this isn't one where you're like, oh, come on, Keezy, and you're just trying to justify your prediction. He is sort of right. There's not a lot, I guess, now because everyone is in agreement. Mm. There's only so much more time, so many more times you can say it.
And it does feel like everything's aligning day for Ten Hag to sort of leave in a fairly dignified fashion at the end of the season, given that United are sort of arranging the other ducks at the club. Do you think that Keyes will be the one, is it even worth asking this, do you think Keyes will be claiming credit for ushering him out the door?
You wouldn't put it past him, certainly, right? He'll definitely stick his oar in and make it known. But I do think one of the possible end scenarios here is that in October next year, when they have got rid of Ten Hag and they've employed a new manager in the summer, Keezy will sort of end up praising Ten Hag. If it goes wrong with a new man, he'll go, even Ten Hag wasn't this bad.
Absolutely.
I know we gave him a lot of stick, but come on.
I can tell you that Keezy's blog has dropped mid-conversation and love this passage. More dark forces at work at Sky. He's running through his injustices of the weekend. Palace should have had a pen versus City. And was everybody in the bunker asleep when Maddison punched Ryan Yates off the ball at Spurs? It's not so bad that Simon Hooper missed it, but it was clear as day for VAR. Maddison should have been sent off. I'm told Jamie Redknapp didn't want to make much of the incident on Sky. I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that Maddison models for Redknapp's clothing company. If that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is. Is it a conflict of interest?
That's brilliant.
That is the crappiest conflict of interest I've ever heard.
He's always unearthing these little scandals.
So he knows stuff, I'm telling you.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Proper journo. Yeah,
He has his sources. Just great as well. I love Gray busting out the stats there on Ten Hag. That was a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah.
A really random stat that someone must have told him or that was put in his lap.
The title of the blog is, if you didn't know, if you hadn't been paying attention to what's happened over the weekend, you might be wondering, where is this going? The title of the blog is, Well Said, Jeff Shee.
How can that be the headline? Because, of course, it is indeed the first line of the blog. You think he would be a better headline man, Charlie? You think he would come up with some more sort of bombastic headlines for his blogs?
Yes and no. I think he's very direct, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just like, ram the point home.
Doesn't need a headline. I'm just going to repeat what I said in the first line.
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
There was a lovely little flourish on beIN this weekend, Dave. They were having a chat about something. I think it might have been who's going to be the next United manager, and they were banging on about Southgate. And Andy Gray has his say for a little bit, and then Keyes just says, I've got something to add. I disagree. Incredible. But anyway, final entry for Keys and Grey Corner this week comes from Rob Barker. He says, I've just been listening to a podcast called One Song, which breaks down and analyses how a particular song was made. This episode about Umbrella by Rihanna appears to feature an unexpected cameo from Richard Keys.
In the background, I'm hearing a sample, and then later in the song, she's also interpolating
Absolutely.
It. And it's of this Michael Jackson song from Thriller.
Who?
It's this gentleman called Michael Jackson.
Ah, wow.
Some
okay.
people called him Mike.
That feels too eerily close Very to good. Our Keezy intonation to be a coincidence, Charlie. Michael Jackson.
Really like that, yeah.
The danger is that the impression of Keezy becomes somebody else's impression of Keezy. We are so far from original Keys now, Dave, it's unbelievable.
I don't think we've got to worry about this fella stealing it from us.
No, fair enough. Right, great adjudication panelling. Well done to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you.
Well done to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with our first Mesut Haaland-Dix guest of the year. See you then.